We're holding on page 154 in Rosh Hashanah, the paragraph labeled Daf Chafches Amud Beis, beginning Mitzvahs. Page 154, yeah. Middle of first chapter. Oh, it says 134 by Yud. Okay, the paragraph is labeled Daf Chafches Amud Beis, the middle of the page. Okay. So the Gemara is discussing the whole matter of mitzvah tzrichas kavana or not. When you're doing a mitzvah, do you have to have in mind that you're doing it for the sake of the mitzvah? For example, let's say you're hearing shofar on Rosh Hashanah, intending to hear it as a musical instrument. Are you still yotze, even though you're not having in mind the mitzvah? And so the Gemara has a whole sugya on the subject. Then in the course of it, then the Gemara mentions that if you're going to say mitzvahs ein tzrichas kavana, then what about when we sit in the sukkah shmini atzeres? Isn't that a problem of bal tosif? If Mela, if you have to have kavana for the mitzvah, fine. We can say on shmini atzeres we sit in the sukkah. We know we sit in there because it's speker d'yom. But we can use the excuse that we're sitting in there because it's nice weather and we want to enjoy it. What we do when it's raining, that's another matter where we say we're crazy people and we like the rain, whatever. The point is, though, but if you say mitzvah and tzrichas kavana, wouldn't it be a problem because you're sitting in the sukkah on extra day, and wouldn't it be an issue of bal tosif? So the Gemara says no, because the Gemara discusses that mitzvah ain't over alein el bismanon, that no, when it comes to a mitzvah, the concept of bal tosif would only apply at the time you're doing the mitzvah. Meaning, in other words, so for example, say you're putting on a pair of tzitzis, and instead of putting four tzitzis on it, you're putting five, then you have a problem of bal tosif, or five parashiyos and tefillin, or things like that. But here, where you're doing it an extra day, that's not for bal tosif. So the Gemara, two pairs of tzitzis wouldn't be bal tosif, because each pair requires its own tzitzis. Famously, I think many people know that the famous Rosh Hashiva, Chaim Pinchas Steinberg, used to wear many, many pairs of tzitzis because he wanted to follow all the different opinions as far as how they should be tied and so on and so forth. So famously, he used to wear many pairs. Yeah, there's no issue about choice with that because each four-cornered garment needs tzitzis. But yeah. So the Gemara says, Masi Rav Shomon Ba'aba. So Rav Shomon Ba'aba says, I have a contradiction. A braisa says, minayim makoyin sha'olu l'duchan. How do we know when the koyin is going up to duchan to bench with birkas koyinim, shalo yomar, he shouldn't say, hoyo v'nosna li Torah reshus l'vorech es Yisrael, since the Torah has given me permission to bless the Jewish people, I don't have to stick to the nusach exclusively that it says in the psukim. Oisif bracha achas mishali, I can add a bracha of my own, kegoin. For example, he might think to add the pasuk, Hashem alakei v'sechem yosef aleichem, that Hashem should add to you as many as you are now. So note, Talmud Loimah, the pasuk says, Loi say sifu ala dovo, don't add anything to the mitzvah that Hashem is telling you. Now, the Gemara continues and asks, V'halacha, kivin debarichle, once he said the three psukim, Yivarecha yor yisa, over leizmane, on the face of it at that point, the time of the mitzvah has passed, he's completed the mitzvah, V'katoni de'oba, before that, and still the Braise is saying that if he were to add a fourth bracha at that point, then he would be over, so how does that fit? So the Gemara starts saying first, maybe it means that he would say that pasuk, Yosef Hashem aleichem kochem, in the middle, you would say between one of the three psukim, and in that case he hasn't completed the mitzvah yet, then the Gemara says no. What it means is, because with Birkas Koyanim, you could do it over and over again during the same day. In principle, every time a Koyan comes to a different shul, he could duchen again. He's not required to, but he could. So therefore, you can still call it the time of the mitzvah as compared to once Shmini Atzeres comes and the time of the mitzvah of Sukkah is over. In this connection, by the way, they ask the question that the Koyanim, after Druchening, they do say an extra bracha. They say the Pasuk HaShkifa. They say, we've done what you told us to do. Now, Hashem, you do us what you do for us what you said. HaShkifa Mlein Kajifa. So why is that not considered Bal Tosif? And the answer is because they're not saying it punim b'punim. They're not saying it facing towards the Sibur and with their hands outstretched and in the position for Birkas Koyanim and so forth. They're saying it rather turned towards the Oren with their hands down. So that's already not part of Birkas Koyanim. That's a separate thing. Yeah, it's in the Siddur, where we say Adu Bamorim after Duchening, when we say the paragraph Adu Bamorim, so it has there, but at the same time, they say a paragraph that begins Rebbeinu Shalom Asisa Masha Gazart Olin. Yeah. They both come from Gemara's. Adu Bamorim comes from Gemara in Brochus, and Rebbeinu Shalom Asisa Masha Gazart Olin comes from Gemara in Sot. Yeah. The Mishnah goes on, so, again, talking about the point, now the Mishnah makes the point that if you're, suppose, for example, that you hear somebody blowing shofar, you have to be machavim for it. So that's what had led the Gemara into that whole discussion of mitzvah tzrichas kavana. Does it mean that you have to be machavim to actually be yotze the mitzvah, or is it enough that you're machavim in the sense that you're actually paying attention and making sure you're not just hearing an echo and making sure you're hearing the sounds in the proper order and so forth? So the Mishnah mentions in that connection to show you the importance of kavana. Pasuk says, by the war with Amalek in Parshas B'Shalach, V'hoya kasher yorim Moshe yodoy v'govar Yisrael v'gomer, when Moshe would lift up his hands, then the Jewish people would be stronger, and so forth, and then we put down his hands, etc. The question is, V'chiyodav shal Moshe oisis mechama oishoveres mechama, do Moshe's hands make or break the war? How can we say, whenever he's lifting up his hands, the Jewish people are winning? Why is that? And the answer is Ela Loy Malach. No, it comes to tell you, Vizman Shem is stacked in Yisro Klapi Maila. When the Jewish people are looking up towards Hashem, and the point is, in other words, usually, you know, in a battle, you should be focusing on the enemy. Here the Mishnah, based on the Pasuk, is making a point that instead they had to be as much as possible focused on Hashem. Umshabdin Libo Mavim Shabashamayim, and they're subjugating their hearts, they're being mevatel their desires to Hashem, to their Father in heaven, Hoyu Misgabrin, then they would be stronger. Vim Lav, and if not, Hoyu Noflim, then they would fall in battle. Marsha points out, you know, we have, and the reason why it has to mention Meshabdin Livam Shabalavim Shabashmayim, before that we find in Parshas B'Shalach, they were not as focused on Hashem as they should be. They were complaining about the mon. They left over the mon. Some of them, at least, Dos and Aviram, left over mon from one day to the next and went out to gather mon on Shabbos. In Refidim, they were complaining that they don't have water and asking Hashem, Ayesh Hashem B'Kirbenu. So therefore, now Hashem shows them that no, when you, the same way as Moshe is lifting up his hands, when you do the same thing with your thoughts and you lift them up towards Hashem, then Hoyu Misgabrim. And if not, then Moshe's hands are going to fall, and then Moshe's hands are going to get weakened, and you're going to fall. Marsha also points out, this is also why, you know, usually when a person davens for the tzibur, he usually stands in a low place. All over Shas, we have the expression, when a person davens by the Omer, we're going to have it later in the Masechta as well, the expression is yored lifnat teva. The person goes down in front of the teva. There are even shuls, actually, there exist shuls where the chazan's place is actually physically lower than the rest of the shul, in token of that. Why is Moshe saying over here, Olu Rosh HaGiva, he went up to the top of a hill over there? The reason is, in order that everybody can see him, and when they see his hands raised up, then that also motivates them to raise them, their minds up towards Hashem, and therefore to win.
Down like a swastika,
where it's a kosher, there's a lot of them where we actually go down. Yeah. Yeah. In a similar vein, you have later on, Parshas Chukas. They complain about the mon again, and Hashem sent snakes. Then the people come to Moshe and ask him to daven. By Yomer Hashem on Moshe, Hashem tells Moshe, make an image of a snake and put it on a pole. And the pasuk says, whoever sees it, you can ask the same question. Does a snake kill or bring alive? And one of the points is, now this is are we talking about the physical snakes that bit them, or are we talking about the living snakes that bit them, or are we talking about this image of the snake? In a way, we're talking about both. Nachash Memis would refer to the biological snakes that are biting them. The fact is, yes, a person is bitten by a snake, but derech hateva they died, but nevertheless, it's all based on the Eved to controlling things. And the Nachash that's on the pole, is that really Machaya? Ella, same thing. When the Jewish people are looking upward, and they're subjugating their hearts to Hashem and to their Father in heaven, then they would be healed. And if not, then they would waste away. Or there's a different gears in Nizoikin, they would be injured and harmed by the snake. So the same idea. In other words, that was why Hashem told Moshe to put the copper snake on a pole so everybody can look up. And while they're looking up and realizing that they're looking up physically, then it also gives them the idea to motivate them to look up spiritually and to look up and realize that they depend on Hashem.
Lashon Hara kills at least three people.
Lashon Hara, yeah. That's why they were being punished with snakes, yeah. Whatever, by the way, makes a point, you know, in a couple of stichas on this, that the reason why we have to mention both, that they had to mistack on Klapimaila and Meshabnas Libim Damim Shabashmayim, based on what Marsha is saying over here. We're saying in both cases, they had acted wrongly. They had showed they're not focused enough on Hashem, and they had insulted Hashem, Ayesh Hashem B'Kirbenu, and they had insulted Moshe. So therefore, it wasn't enough for them to just ask Moshe to daven on their behalf, they had to actually do tshuva, mishabdim livim, mishabdim shabashamayim, and only then are they able to win the war, and only then are they able to be cured from the snake bites. Yom Tov Shor Rosh Hashanah Perek Ravi. So this Perek continues talking about the dinim of Rosh Hashanah. Starts off with Yom Tov Shor Rosh Hashanah Shachalis B'Shabbos, that we don't blow shofar outside of Beis Din when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos. Eventually, then in the middle of the Perek, it talks about a case that happened in the times of the Beis Mikdash, where the Edim, usually what it is like this. Now the moon is visible on the evening of the 29th. Once in a while, occasionally it could be visible even before Shkia, but that's pretty rare because usually the sun would wash it out. Usually you would see it during a short time after Shkia that Amma mentions in Hilchos Kiddush HaKodesh. You have approximately a 20-minute window when you could expect to see it. But you can't be Makadosh HaKodesh at night, the Gemara establishes in at the beginning of the third Perek. Therefore, so usually the Edim would come first thing on the morning of the 30th, and after they then hears them out, they would declare that day as Rosh Chodesh, and in the case of Rosh Hashanah, that's the one day Rosh Hashanah. So the Mishnah describes there was a scenario where the Edim didn't come until after they had to bring the Korban Talmud Shabbat HaBayim. And now they had a problem. What do we do as far as the Shir Shal Yom? The Gemara mentions that every Yom Tov has a special Shir Shal Yom. So now they didn't know which one they should do. But there's in fact a good deal of discussion why the Mishnah focuses only on that. Why does the Mishnah focus on the fact that they didn't know whether they should bring the Korban Musaf of Rosh Hashanah and of Rosh Chodesh? Tosfos discusses that point. Anyway, the Gemara itself brings a machlokes. This doesn't mean because they didn't know what to do, did they say the Shir of the weekday or did they not say a Shira at all? Anyway, the Mishnah mentions, therefore, the Beis Din of that time, the Sanhedrin of that time, made a takana that from now on we're only accepting Edim until the time of the Korban Talmud Shabbat HaBayim, until Mincha time. If they come any later than that, we tell them, come back tomorrow, and that's when we have 2 days Rosh Hashanah. And then the Gemara in Beitza talks about further about that. The Mishnah mentions after the Korban, then they went back to the original takana. Nevertheless, the Gemara in Beitza says they still kept the interim takana, that in such a case, Noyagan Osar Yom Kodesh or Mocha Kodesh, which is why we have 2 days Rosh Hashanah now and why we consider them like Yom Arichta, unlike every other two day Yom. Anyway, so that leads the Gemara into a discussion of the Shir Shor Yom that they would say every day in the Mishnah. So Tanya, we learn a Braisa of Yehuda Omer Meshum Rav Akiva. Barishan Mahu Omer, what shir would they say on Sunday in the Beis Mikdash? And of course, every shir that we're saying over here is also what we say in davening. They'd say the kapitel, Hashemah Rotzim Lo Yotev Ol V'Yoshveva. Each time means the entire kapitel. Why is that kapitel appropriate? Al Shum Shekona V'Hikna V'Shalit V'Sholak V'Olam. Because on that day, Hashem, so to speak, acquired the world. He brought the world into existence, and therefore it's a kinyan. It's something that it's an acquisition. It's something. It's a possession of Hashem. We have the obviously kona doesn't mean he acquired it from somebody else, but it's like the expression we have in Pirkei Avos, Chamisha Kinyonim Kona Hakadosh Baruch Hu V'Olam. It means it's, so to speak, it's an asset that now Hashem has. So Hashem now has the world. He created the world, and now he has that asset, the hikna, and he made it. He was machne to the people, to the creatures, and to the people who live in the world, in order that they should be able to make a din of a tachtonim in it. The shalach ba'olamo, and he ruled exclusively in his world. The Rashi mentions on the Pesukim, for example, that there wasn't malachim were even created on that day. They were created only the next day. So on the first day, Hashem is, so to speak, the only existence in the world. So therefore, Maharsha says that the connection is, that's why you have that Hashem oritzim loya, that Hashem owns the world. Then you have mi yala bahar Hashem the kichapayim of our lev. Of that refers to the hikna, that Hashem gave the world over to people who act in the proper ways. And the fact that he's sholach ba'olam, the fact that Hashem is the exclusive ruler, we see in the pesukim at the end, sushar mashecham yovei melech hakavim. So that's the connection with Sunday. Vasheni mahu omer, what would they say on Monday? Capital memches, gonel Hashem mahulam oid v'gema. Hashem is very great and very praised in the Ir Elokeinu, in the city of Hashem. That means al shem shechilak ma'isav, on that day, Hashem divided up his works. On that day, Hashem made the separation of Ayabdel Akim, Ben Amayim, between the water below and above the Rakia, u'molach aleihem, and he ruled over them. So that's what we have, Godel Hashem, Mahulam Oid, and it talks about how Hashem rules over the world, and we see his kingship. So Marashal says that's why you have. So you have in that capital, Yafei Noif Mesos Kolaretz. We learned before that Yafei Noif, one meaning of it is beautiful like a kala. So referring to Yerushalayim, which is the centerpiece of the entire physical world, is beautiful like a kala. So therefore, so we see that now you have, for the first time, there's a difference between Yonim and Tachtonim. Eitz Yosef brings another point as well, that when we say that Hashem divided up between the Oyonim and the Tachtonim, doesn't just mean there's a physical division, it means there's also a division in how Hashem runs them. The upper worlds, Hashem, so to speak, rules over more directly. The lower ones, Hashem rules through the laws of nature that he created. Therefore, we can say there's two different types of Anhaga that we perceive of how Hashem runs things. But Gimel Mahu Imran, what would they say on Tuesday? Elikim Nitza Ba'adas Keil, capital Pei Beis, Hashem stands in the congregation of Hashem, meaning the Dayanim, and that's Hashem Shagila Eretz B'Chochmase. On that day, Hashem revealed the world with Hashem revealed the dry land with his Chochmah. He told the water to recede into the oceans and then revealed the dry land, the Hechen Tevel Adose, and prepared Tevel, particularly Tevel, Mephoshim explains, often means the inhabited areas of the world. Eretz means the world in general, inhabited and uninhabited. Tevel generally means the inhabited areas. Anyway, La Adose for his congregation, therefore Ba'adas Kale. So Marshall also adds the point that in that capital we have that capital is instructions for the Dayanim, Admosai Tishpatu Ovel, Shiftu Dolva Yosin, etc., because proper mishpat is what keeps the world running, what keeps the world. And in fact, when they had Chomos and everything before the Mabel, is when the world was reflooded. So therefore, this capital stresses the point, make sure to act, you Dayanim, make sure to act in a way that the world will remain, that the world will remain inhabited. That's Tuesday. The Dalad Mahu Omer, what capital would they say on Wednesday? Keil Nekomas Hashem, Keil Nekomas Ephiah, which is talking about the punishment of the Rishoyim. Al Shem Shabbara Chama Olavonim, because on Wednesday is when Hashem created the sun and moon, of Osid Lipora Me'evdehen, and in the future Hashem is going to punish those who worship them. So therefore we talk about Keil Nekomas Hashem, and we talk about what Hashem is going to do for them. In fact, Eitz Yosef refers over here to a Gemara in Brachas that mentions that every day when the sun rises and the kings put on their crowns, like to show we're doing this with the full power of our kingship and we're going and worshiping the sun, then that makes Hashem angry. So therefore that's Keil Nekomas Hashem, that Hashem is going to take Nekoma from them. And Hefia, in fact, he says the word Hefia means to shine. So it means that Hashem is going to shine forth and outshine the sun and the moon and go and punish punish these kings and these other people who worship these heavenly bodies. Marsha also mentions over here in a Gemara in Erchin that capital, which was, again talks about the punishment of the Rishoyim, it also refers to the Rishoyim who destroyed the Beis Mikdash. And now the Gemara in Erchin tells us the Churban both times happened on a Sunday. And the Shir Shoyem for Sunday, as we said, is Hashem Aratzim Loya. But both times, the Gemara says, Hashem put it into the minds of the Levim, and they started singing the wrong Shir Shoyem. They started singing this one, Keil Nekomas, as if to say, yes, the Goyim are destroying the Beis Mikdash because Hashem is allowing it, but Hashem is going to punish them and take his revenge on them for everything they did. Next, Behei Mahu Omer, what capital would they say on Thursday? Haninu le kimozena horiu le keyaker, sing to Hashem our strength, sing to shout out to Hashem. Hashem shabara oifus for dogim, because on Thursday Hashem created the birds and the fish, l'shabeach l'shmoi, to bring praise to his name. Meaning Rashi says a person sees different kinds of birds, then that causes a person, that motivates a person to praise Hashem who created so many different kinds of amazing creatures. Eitz Yosef points out, that's why you have the word Hauninu. If it just meant you yourself sing, then it would be Raninu. Hauninu is actually a transitive verb. You cause to sing. So that means, in other words, that the birds cause us, when we see all the different kinds of birds and fish and whatnot out there, that causes us to sing to Hashem. The Vav Mahu Omer, what do they say on Friday? Hashem Malach Geus Lavesh. Hashem has ruled. He's dressed himself, so to speak, in grandeur. Al Shem Shagoma Meiser from Malachter Malach Aleim. Because on Friday, Hashem finished all of his work of creating the world and ruled over them. So therefore, Hashem Malach, now Hashem is fully the king over the world. Because now all the subjects have been created, and Eitz Yosef adds the point also, in particular, human beings were created. Ein melech v'loyam. So until Adam and Chava were created, you can't really speak of Hashem fully as a melech. B'zayin mahu oimer, what do they say on Shabbos? Mizmer shiri yom Shabbos, which is l'yom shekulei Shabbos. That capital refers not to the weekly Shabbos, it refers to the Shabbos of the future, when, as it actually says, the world is going to be destroyed, which we'll talk about in a minute what that means. And nobody's going to be, there's no people and no malachas and everything, so therefore it's a Shabbos, it's the ultimate Shabbos. Because Shabbos, after all, means cessation. So it means everything is going to cease. So that's the capital for Shabbos. But Amar Rav Nechemia, so that was all Rav Yehuda saying that in the name of Rav Akiva. But Amar Rav Nechemia, v'chimar ro Rav Akiva, l'chalek ben aprokim alozu. The question is, though, why does Rav Akiva consider that he's distinguishing between all these kapitlach? Meaning, in other words, the first six were saying, refer to things that Hashem did during Ma'aseh Bereishis. All of a sudden, with Mizmor Shiri Yom HaShabbos, you're saying you're not referring to what Hashem did in the past, but what Hashem will do in the future after the 6,000 years of world history. So why the difference? All of them should be referring to the past. Ella, sort of Nehemia goes through the whole list again. Why he has to go through the whole list again? There's a couple of different explanations. Ben Yehoyada says, in order to show, it's not just that you shouldn't think, he's going to say, I'm like an Amora, where sometimes you'll have an Amora will take something that a Tana says and fix up a couple of the words to make it work. No, Rav Nechemia is saying exactly the way I'm going to quote now is how I heard it from Rabbi Akiva, word for word. There's a set of Trubis called Knesset Yechezkel, the author of Rabbi Chezkel Katzenellenbergen was a Rav in the famous Kehillah of Altona a couple of hundred years back before Rabbi Yonasan Agashitz. So he wrote a Trubah about this, and he explains Rabbi Nechemia's point with repeating the whole thing is, because like this, he discusses at some length there that you could look at it not just the Reb Nechemia saying you have to distinguish between past and future. You can also ask the question, when David wrote all these other kapitlach, was he meaning with each one of them to refer to what happened on the respective day of Ma'aseh Bereishis, and therefore, so the Chachamim followed that in determining which one should be for which day, or is it that he didn't have any particular days in mind and the Chachamim came up with it on their own? So therefore, Reb Nechemia repeats the whole thing in order to stress that he has a different viewpoint on how, on why each of these kapitlach has the theme that it does in the first place. About this Reb Chezkel, by the way, worth telling a little maisala about him. He was among other things, he being the shtotter of, sometimes he davened by the yomud, but apparently he wasn't very good at chazonos. So in particular, when it came to Shemin in Shemin Esri, to Machal Kochayim, he had a way of doing it that invited a certain amount of ridicule. So there was a yid in town who used to go. He would go into bars and taverns and go and copy and parody the Rav's Machal Kochayim, and the people were there would give him money for drinks. So they told the Rav about it. It's a big chutzpah that this guy is doing. So the Rav, though, the Rav Yecheskel says, you know what, fine, it's a parnosah for a yid, let him. And he wrote him out a letter that says, in order to be mechalkel, his chayim, in order to sustain his life, I give this yid permission, the bearer of this letter, permission to do mechalkel chayim. Okay. So Rav Nechemia goes through the whole thing again. Ela barishin shekona v'hikna v'shalat v'olamai. Yes, on Sunday, the capital is because Hashem acquired and gave over the world to humanity and ruled in his world. The beis shechilek ma'isel v'malach aleihem. On Monday, he divided up his works, heaven from earth, and ruled over them. V'nis'al v'yoshev amorim. And I think I skipped this line before, actually. V'nis'al v'yoshev amorim. That he was, so to speak, now elevated and sat in the heavens. In other words, Hashem is everywhere, but we talk about Hashem as being more enthroned in Shemayim than on earth. The Gimel Shagila Eretz Mechachmasi V'Heichem Tevel Adosei. On Tuesday, he revealed the earth, the dry land, with his Chachma, and prepared the world, and prepared the settled world for his Eda, for his congregation. But Dalet Shebarach Hamol Levonav Asid Likorem Me'evdehem. He created the sun and moon, and is going to punish those who worship them. Behei Shebarach Ophis V'Dogim L'Shabeach L'Shmoy. On Thursday, he created the birds and the fish, who praise his name, that we should praise his name that way when we see all the amazing things that he created. Bavav Shagoma Maisa, Vamalachta, Vamalach Aleim. On Friday, he finished all of his works, all of his malacha, and ruled over them. and the Zion al Shem Sheshavas. Now, here's where Reb Nechemiah disagrees and says the Shir Shoyim for Shabbos is because Hashem rested on the seventh day, so therefore Mizmor Shir Yom Shabbos is on that theme, not about the Shavisa La'asid Lavoi, but rather the Shavisa in the past. Eitz Yosef mentions over here that you have the Medrash mentions that originally Hashem, that originally the first Shabbos after Hashem created the world, the world was light the entire time. There was no darkness on that Shabbos. Only on Motzei Shabbos it got dark. And the Gemara mentions in Avodah Zarah that Odom Harishon got frightened, and that's when Hashem gave him the idea to strike two stones together to make fire, and that's why we say Bodom Odom Eish on Motzei Shabbos. So it's really kind of both. So there is that the capital can be referring to the time Ma'asid Lava, Yom Shekolo Shabbos, but it can also be referring to that unique Shabbos of Ma'ase Bereishis. Okay, so the Gemara says, "V'kam miftzi gibidur of Ketin." The underlying machloikus between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemia is about what Rav Ketina says. The Amr of Ketina, Shita al v'shnin have alma. The world as we know it is going to last for 6,000 years. V'chad bari. And then there's going to be 1,000 years when it's destroyed. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, "V'niska Hashem levade b'yemahu." Hashem will be exalted on that day alone. So a day is 1,000 years. Ki elof shanim b'enecha ki emesmel. So therefore, it means that Hashem will be exalted alone. In other words, there's not going to be any metzius that anybody's going to see anything other than elofus. Abaya on the tray charuv. Abaya says there's going to be 2 periods of charuv, 2,000 years. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Yichayenu miyadnayim. Hashem will keep us alive during the 2 days. Again, meaning during the 2,000 years. And then Vayim Ashlishi Kimenu v'nichya lafanim. The Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin that even when the world is destroyed, it says that the tzaddikim are going to be floating on the water with wings. So what does all this mean? What's the sechad charuv business? So there's a few places in Chassidus where it talks about the idea that it means not destruction like we understand in the simple sense, but in the sense that the world is going to be on an incomparably higher level such that anything that we perceive as Metzius is no longer going to exist in any form that we can recognize. It's going to be visible only as pure elikus. So therefore, like Rashi says, there's going to be no malacha, because malacha is the idea of avodis habirurim. There's not going to need to be any birur at that point. Everything has already been nisbarer. So therefore, in that sense, we can refer to it as the time of Shabbos, and then we can refer to it as charuv, as in destroyed and desolate, in the sense that there is nothing else other than pure elikus. So why is it true? So in most places, actually, I haven't found very many places in Siddur where it talks about one versus two. Most of them seem to follow Rav Ketina's opinion that says that there's one. There is actually a sikha in Chevet Zion where the Rebbe analyzes like this. We know that you have a machlokas between Rav Yehuda and Rav Nechemia elsewhere about the question, the Mosa Mashiach, what's going to happen with the dangerous animals? Where it says the Shvati Chayarom and Aret doesn't mean that they're going to still exist but not be harmful anymore, not be dangerous anymore, or it doesn't mean they're going to be completely removed from the world. So that ties that in with this over here, that we can say, according to the opinion that Chad Charuv, so the idea is, in other words, like this. According to Rabbi Yehuda, there's only 1,000 years that are full of Shabbos, because he holds, like Rabbi Ketina, that Chad Charuv. Therefore, according to him, you can have a Mizmor Shir that refers to that 1,000 years of world, or of not world, really, because Chad Charuv. According to Abaya's way of looking at it, that's Trei Charuv, you can't really have a Mizmor Shir, the Yom HaShabbos, that refers to one day, one millennium of that. Therefore, he has to say that it refers to the original Shabbos of Ma'aseh Bereishis. So again, in that Sicha, in Chelek Zayin, that ever ties that in with this Machloikas about whether, if you say that the wild animals are still going to continue to exist but not be harmful anymore, means, first of all, there's only one change that's needed to take them from being dangerous to being non-dangerous. That's like Chad Charuv. And it also more reflects the fact that before by Ma'aseh Bereishis originally the animals were dangerous. Only afterwards did they become. As opposed to if you say that they have to be first made not dangerous and then removed altogether, then it means you need a double change. That's Trei Charuv. And then in that case you have something new that never existed before, because by Ma'aseh Bereishis the animals did exist. As soon as Hashem created them, they existed already on that first Shabbos, and therefore it's not really the same thing, and therefore Mizmor Shir Yom HaShabbos would, if it's going to refer to something new, it would have to refer exclusively to that. Okay. Now, there's also, by the way, there's places in Chassidus where it ties in this word charuv here we have it, it's printed over here, Chariv, but in the printed Gemara, it's printed as Charuv. There are places where it ties it in. The famous thing, you have Rav Chanina ben Dosa would subsist on a Kav Charuvim from Erev Shabbos to Erev Shabbos, and Rav Shimon Yechoi and Rav Elazar ate Charuvim in the cave over there, that it all ties in. We're talking about a very high level of Gula Yalakus, of the kind that is a, like almost overwhelms the world and makes it, and then makes it that it's Ois Matthias. The Gemara says, "B'musfei de Shabbos amahol yoyimim." What shir shol yoyim would they say in the Besmikdash by musaf of Shabbos? So here we were talking about the shir shol yoyim, which they would do by the Talmud Shol Shachar. Now, what about when it comes to the Korban musaf? In general, the rule is, by the way, every shir that's talking about was done while they're pouring the wine of the nesachim of the Korban on the mizbeach. You have when it comes to the Korban Pesach, there's no nesachim, so then they would do it while they're shech Korban. Anyway, so by the Musafim, again, you have wine that goes with them. So what would they say? Amar of Onan bar Rava, Amar Rav, Haziv Loch. They would split up Shiras Hazinu into six parts. And they would do, and as Gemara is going to explain soon, they would do one part every Shabbos. Rashi gives a division how it is. Rashi's division has that the first three sections are each six psukim, and then he says the last three sections are each eight psukim. If you count up the psukim as we have them in our chumashim, in our sifrei Torah, it's actually 6, 6, 6, 8, 9, 8 in Rashi's division. So either Rashi had a different division of psukim, or he means 8 or at least 8 or something, whatever. According to Rashi, it's fairly symmetrical. Tosfos brings a couple of other possibilities that are in different manuscripts and in Masech Besoifrim and in Rabbeinu Hananel. The Rambam has yet another one. So there are several. Everybody agrees the Hay is Hazin. The Zion is Zechor Yemo Solom, which is Pasuk Zion. The rest of them, the Yud, the Vav, the Lamed, and the Chof, there are various opinions what they are. So they would split it up like that, and they would do one every week. In fact, in Masech Sofrim, the Masech Sofrim's version of it has between the Yud and the Vav, there's only two psukim. The Masech Sofrim begins the Yud with Yaukivehu, and then the Vav is by Yishvan Yeshurim, which is only two psukim later. The same division that they do here for the shir of Musaf in the Beis Mikdash is the same way. We divide them up in shul. We also divide up Hazinu, the shir of Hazinu, into six aliyahs, and they go like that. And the seventh aliyah is the psukim after the shira until the end of the parashah. Following the Sefer Sofrim, that one of them is only two psukim. Obviously, we can't do it that way in shul, because you need at least three psukim for each aliyah. So of necessity, then it would mean that if we had a point in the Sefer Sofrim in shul, it would have to be somewhat different. Marsha points out that there's a good simon in it that they use the word Haziv Loch, because this is the Shira of Moshe Rabbeinu. In fact, it's even brought that Moshe signs his name at the beginning of it, the initials of the psukim from the beginning of the first letter of each pasuk from Hazinu until Hal Hashem Tikmud Ozois add up to the gematria of Moshe. It's broad. In fact, that's one reason why the hay is extra large, because the end of Moshe's signature, so to speak. So now, Haziv Loch, the glow, the shine is yours, referring to the shine of Moshe Rabbeinu's face, Karan Urpano. So therefore, we divide it like that. Next, there's an interesting sicha in Chelek Chav Dalet where the Rebbe talks about. So what's the idea? Why of all things are they using Hazinu as a shira in the Beis Mikdash? Doesn't it include Poronos and things like that? So here Marisha says, okay, the Chachamim picked all the shiras that you find in the Torah. The Chachamim picked all three shiras that you find in Chumash. This as Yosher and the shira of the Be'er, and they set them up as the shiras for Shabbos. And he explains also, the vote is, on weekdays we do Tillim, which is from David, who's on a lesser level than Moshe Rabbeinu. Then on Shabbos we want to do the shiras of Moshe. Still, the Rebbe asks in the Sticha, I mean, large parts of Hazinu are not really so positive, so why are we using them as a, why Bechlal is it called the shira anyway, and why are we using it as a shira in the Beis Mikdash? One thing that Rebbe makes a point over there, actually, that if you follow Rashi's division, it comes out there are sections that are entirely Poronos and no Nechama in it at all. Whereas if you follow the Rambams, which is actually how we have it in our Chumashim, some of them do have Poronos, but every single one does have Nechama in it as well. And that's the idea, is that we're showing that the Poronos is only there. It's only Yudit Sora Chaliyah, and therefore, yes, it deserves to be called a Shira. It is, after all, a song of happiness to Hashem. That even though things had Hashem had to make things happen the way he did, nevertheless, it's all for the purpose of Nechama. Interestingly, also in that sikha, that ever goes on and finds a connection between each, why Yaakov, they split it into six parts, no more, no less. He explains over there that actually you can find a connection between each of the six sections of Hazinu and the respective Shir Shoyim. The first one corresponds, the first one where we said that Hashem first created the world, Kana v'Hikna, v'Shalat Ba'olamo, corresponds to the first few psukim. I'm going to teach you Torah, Yarev Kamato Likhi. The second one, which talks about that Hashem split up the heaven and earth and ruled over it, corresponds to the second part, Zechori Mos Olam, when Hashem split up, brought the Mabul and divided up the nations and scattered them all over the world and so forth. And so each one corresponds to an appropriate part of the Shir. So that's why they did it Dafka in six. Next, the Gemara says, the Mincha, the Shabbos, the Maho Yerimim. What about by Mincha, by the Talmud Choben HaBayim on Shabbos? What Shira did they say? Now, the other weekdays, the Gemara is not asking about that, the Pashtos, because they would just do the same one. But on Shabbos, the Mishmaris would switch. The old Mishma would do the Avodah of the Talmud Shal Shachar and the Musaf, and then they're done their shift, and the new Mishma would take over the Talmud Choben HaBayim. Therefore, the Gemara assumes there had to have been a different Shira for that. So they would do the other shiras that you find in the Torah. The beginning of Oz Yashir from the Shiras Ayam, Micha Moicha, which is from the middle of that, it's considered like a separate perek, it's like a new theme in the Shira, and then the Oz Yashir, meaning the Shira of the Be'er in Parshas Chukas. So again, the idea is, Marsha says, that they wanted to gather together all the shiras that Moshe Rabbeinu said in the Torah, and all of those are going to be specially for Shabbos. So the Gemara asks, "Bori lahu, hani kulu b'chad Shabbos, omer lahu." When we say "Oz Yashir nekamoicha" and "Oz Yashir," do we mean that they were all on one Shabbos? Or do we mean kol Shabbos b'Shabbos amri chad? Or maybe it means one Shabbos they would do the first half of "Oz Yashir," the second Shabbos they would do "Micha Moicha" until the end of the Shira, the third one they would do the Shira Sabeir and then repeat over. So the Gemara says, "Toshma d'Tanya," we learn in a brisa, "Amr Rabbi Yosi." Ad Shor Rishona Imeres Achas, while the first one, meaning Hazinu, is going through one cycle, Shnia Chazeres Shtayim. The second one, meaning the other Shiras, would go through two cycles, because there are six parts of Hazinu and three parts of the other Shiras. Shema Minah, Kol Shabbos of Shabbos, Amri Chad, that shows that each week they would do one of them. So the first Shabbos they would do one, the second one, the third, and meanwhile they've gone through half of Hazinu, and then the fourth, fifth, and sixth Shabbos, and they're doing the second half of Hazinu, and they would repeat over these three Shiras and go like that. The Rambam seems to have had a different view, so the Rambam doesn't mention the Shiras HaBe'er, he mentions only Oz Yosher and Mika Moicha. So either he would hold that they split it into three parts, or he would have a different view, say, in the Gemara, that while they went through one cycle of that, they would only have gone through one third of Hazinu, and so they'd have three cycles to one. The Gemara mentions the point that the Sanhedrin had moved to Yavne, and they made a number of the Takonis that it mentions in our Perek. Over there, in particular, you have the part about that you blow shofar in Beistin only when it's a Beistin that's a regularly established Beistin like the one in Yavne, and you have various takonis that it mentions over there that were done in Yavne. So that's going to lead the Gemara into discussing the various places where the Sanhedrin went into Golus after they left the Lishkas of Golus. But first, by preface to that, the Gemara starts mentioning the Golusin that the Shechin went through. But actually, I guess we'll leave that for tomorrow. I guess. Yem yem Mashiach ugeula. Meshchodesh nissen. So we know we have the minhag. I hope everybody has remembered it over here to say the parasha of the nasi on Meshchodesh nissen. We say nachshon min aminadav, and then we continue through each day with each of the other. So the Rebbe talks about the Yesh Loimar, that this minhag of reading the parashas and the Siyam and Nissen really has to do with the whole concept of Geula, which is in Chodesh Nissen. The entire Chodesh Nissen is a time of Geula, as Chazal tells us. The Nissen we learned earlier in this Masechta. The Nissen Nigalu, we were redeemed from Mitzrayim and Nissen. The Nissen Asidim Ligol, and we'll be redeemed from this Golus and Nissen. So, and the word Nissen itself is Moloshin Nes, the Gemara mentions in Brachas, that if a person sees the name Nissen in a dream, then it means that Nissim are going to be done for him. So therefore, during Chodesh Nissen, we read about the Nesiim, about the Korbanos of the Nesiim, for the Chanukah San Mishkan, because that's the most appropriate time for the Geula Mitzvah Shleima. And then there's going to be the Chanukah San Beis Mikdash HaShlishi, which is the ultimate completion of the Mishkan and the Beis Mikdash. In fact, in that connection, after Yapsukim in Yechezkel, we read some of them as the Aftorah for Parashas HaChodesh that talk about various korbanos lost in Lavoi that seem to be very different than the korbanos that we have listed in the Torah. And in fact, the Gemara mentioned that the Chachamim were concerned about that, and they were thinking of hiding away sacred Yechezkel because people are going to misinterpret it, until Hananiah ben Chizkiah ben Gordon went and explained the Psukim. One of the explanations is, in fact, that those are korbanos miluyim, and the Malbim in particular explains over there, it mentions over there unusual korbanos doing Chodesh Nissen and doing Pesach and doing Sukkot. So he explains that actually what's going to be is there's going to be a Chanukah Sabayis that begins in Nissen and extends all the way through to the following Tishrei, and therefore during all that time and the various Yom Tovim during that time, then yes, there are special korbanos being brought from miluyim. So we see, in other words, the idea that the miluyim of the Beis Mikdash are actually going to begin in Nissen. Continuing halachos of Shabbos. When you have a black piece of clothing, and the Alter Rebbe adds, it means when it's new specifically, so it's very black. So if you have snow or dust on it, you're not allowed to shake it off, because that would be malabin. That's you're doing that in order to make it look clean and nice. But you would be allowed to. On the other hand, if you have little feathers on it, you are allowed to take those off by hand. The Alter Rebbe agrees with that, although the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says yes, choshishin, some are choshish on that as well, that maybe you shouldn't do that. Another halacha, more about dirt on clothing.
So if it's not new, it's okay.
So if it's not new, then it's okay, because then it's not really so, it's anyway got dust and whatever on it. So therefore, when you shake off the extra dust, you're not really making it look any better than it did before.
Brushing
it might be more of an issue, yeah. Because then you actually are getting it more to its pristine state, yeah. Okay, another halacha. If you have mud on your foot or on your shoe, you're allowed to remove it with something that's not mortar, or you can rub it against, for example, a beam or something like that, but not on the wall or on the ground, because then it's part of binyan, and like you're adding dirt to the building or to the ground, and that would be a problem of binyan. The shasab chak, for example, you have let's say instead of mud, instead of soya, and you don't want that on your shoe, then you would be allowed to wipe it off on the wall. Now, the Rebbe actually says differently. In the Ikra Din, you're allowed to, even on the ground or on the wall. L'chatzchila, it's better to use a beam or a wooden wall or something like that. If you don't have a wall available, then you can rub it on the ground. And if you have water, then you can wash it off if it's made out of leather. Because when it comes to leather, the whole concept of kibbutz doesn't apply to leather if you just pour water on it. Cloth, if you pour water on it, you have a problem with kibbutz, which is a tolda of malabin. But leather, you don't have that if you're just pouring water on it. Only if you rub it together the way you do when you're actually cleaning leather. Either way, though, you're not allowed to scrape it off with a knife from a leather shoe, because that would be a problem of machet. That's the malacha of smoothing out leather. Sometimes you have, they used to have, sometimes you see them even now in front of old houses, you have these little things built into the ground, these scrapers that are meant precisely for that purpose. So if it's sharp, then you're not allowed to use that for that purpose. If it's not sharp, then it's fine.
Same problem for rubbing on the ground?
No, so it's a different thing. Rubbing on the ground, the problem is, he's saying that the problem is then you're adding more to the ground. So you're doing the malacha of boina. You're building up the ground by adding more dirt, by adding more mud to it. This kind of scraper that we're talking about, the problem is you're scraping a leather shoe on it, you have an issue of mamachet, that you're smoothing out the leather. Would that apply to shoes, for example, with rubber soles like we have nowadays? That I don't know. It's hard to say that mamachet applies to those, but I don't really know, actually.